You're listening to Central Time. I'm Veronica Rickert.
And I'm Rob Ferret. Coming up, the staff of the Cincinnati Zoo made the controversial decision this weekend to shoot an endangered silverback gorilla after a young boy fell into the enclosure. People quickly turned on the boy's mother and questioned why she wasn't watching the child more closely. We'll talk about parenting and responsibility in a half an hour.
First, 20 years ago, medical disorders like binge eating disorder, intermittent explosive disorder, and low testosterone weren't considered a part of mainstream science.
Today, millions of Americans now deal with these and other non-life-threatening conditions thanks to new medical definitions and lowered thresholds for diagnosis, which means millions of Americans are buying more prescription drugs to treat these concerns.
Some doctors and researchers are skeptical, though, saying these conditions are the product of pharmaceutical industry funding and drug companies trying to get more customers.
John Fauber joins us now to talk about a report he did on this issue. He's a medical reporter at the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel and part of the USA Today network. His latest piece is called Illness Inflation. It was done in partnership with MedPage Today. John, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Thanks for having me.
Well, before we get into some of the specific conditions, quote-unquote, I guess, you looked at how widespread is this idea that we're seeing more types of diagnoses, a lower threshold for diagnoses that's making people eligible for new and different medications?
Well, it's a growing phenomenon, I guess. It's a process that some people refer to as medicalization, where you take a condition that maybe has some basis in everyday life and turn it into a medical disorder. And so we decided, you know, we, as a medical reporter and my colleague on this, Christina Fiore, who works with MedPage, she and I had both kind of seen this becoming more and more of a common thing over the years, so we decided to take a look at a bunch of these conditions just to see how they evolved and how they made the move from sort of conditions of everyday life to medical disorders, or in some cases actually psychiatric disorders.
Let's look at a couple of these just so we know what we're talking about here. One, intermittent explosive disorder. That sounds pretty bad. It sounds like it means getting really, really angry sometimes. Could you talk about that and how it became a more widespread diagnosis?
Yeah, and that's one that I thought was really interesting. You know, it's got a lot of these conditions are known by acronyms that usually end in D. Intermittent explosive disorder is IED, and a lot of people probably know that term from the Gulf War, which it was a intermittent explosive device, but in psychiatry it's a whole different thing. And it's a condition that that essentially is something that people who have anger and rage issues that are inappropriate or beyond what is, you know, justified, and to have this on a regular basis, this is what they may be labeled as having, intermittent explosive disorder. You know, I guess the common one is road rage. It can be both. It can be either physical outbursts, you know, where you actually assault someone or damage property. But it can also just be verbal. They changed the definition of the condition a few years ago. It used to have to be something that was physical. In other words, people or property. And then in 2013, when the American Psychiatric Association came out with its new manual on psychiatric disorders, they essentially said it could be just verbal if it happened on a frequent enough basis.
Now, that's more of a psychiatric one. There's also diagnoses like low testosterone, where that's, I guess, something you can measure and put a number on. How has that changed?
Sure. So, you know, for many years, there were drugs going back decades that treated low testosterone that was a result of some kind of injury or illness. It was kind of a rare condition called hypogonadism, and it was largely unknown to most people. And then as the sort of the baby boom generation started getting older and started having some of the symptoms that have been associated with low testosterone, these drugs started being used more to treat age-related loss of testosterone. This is sort of the normal loss of testosterone that occurs with aging. And when that occurs, there's symptoms that are sort of linked to it, everything from lack of interest in sex to, you know, more fat tissue to moodiness to, is a number of conditions. In 2006, there was a big study done. It was funded by a drug company, the company that was making the leading testosterone product at the time. And they did a big national survey of men who went into their doctors, and they tested their blood levels of testosterone and determined that substantial numbers of men over the age of 45 had low testosterone, or what would be eventually become known as low T. They found that about 14 million men had low T. This was in 2006, and then a few years later, people started seeing a lot of the TV commercials you probably recall on low testosterone. So that's kind of the story of low testosterone.
Now, those are just a couple of the examples. You look at eight or more different conditions, but a uniting theme is that a drug ends up being developed for these new diagnoses, or an existing drug is repurposed for it, or there's a drug coming down the pipeline. So is there a suspicion that this isn't really a medical issue? This is somehow driven by pharmaceutical company money.
Yeah, I mean, that's sort of the theme of the story, or one of the themes of our stories that we did on this. And this is sort of a, we're taking a long-term look at this. We had an initial bunch of stories that ran a couple of weeks ago. There were four stories, and we're planning to do more throughout the year. But yes, drug company, you know, fingerprints can be found all over these conditions. And it happens in a variety of different ways. You know, I mentioned low T. Well, the company that funded the study that said that 14 million men over the age of 45 have low testosterone was a company known as Solvay Pharmaceutical, which made the leading testosterone product at the time. Drug company money can also be used to fund medical societies or associations that actually create the definitions of some of these diseases or disorders. You know, there's like the American Psychiatric Association has defined several of them. So has the American Diabetes Association. One of the conditions we looked at is pre-diabetes, and the American Diabetes Association has received millions of dollars in annual funding from companies that make diabetes drugs. And as a matter of fact, the panel of experts that set the definition for pre-diabetes, they did it twice, actually. Over the last 13 years, the majority of them had financial arrangements with drug companies, either working as speakers or consultants. So you can see the drug company influence in that way. And again, you can also see it with some of these studies that are done to create what are known as prevalence estimates, and that is how many people actually have one of these conditions. Oftentimes, the people, the experts who do this are people who, you know, are doctors and sometimes academic physicians who have financial relationships with drug companies.
Talking to John Fauber from the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel about illness inflation, the idea that new medical diagnoses are being come up with or existing ones are being expanded, diagnosing more of us with a problem, and we're getting prescribed medications to deal with them. And, John, that's the big worry, isn't it, that maybe a lot of us are taking medications that we don't really need, and no medication really comes out without a risk of some kind of side effect.
Yeah, I mean, that's certainly a big concern. I mean, not all of these conditions have drugs that are approved to treat them, although all of them have drugs that have been used or can be used to treat them. Maybe a good example would be binge eating disorder. A couple of years ago, the FDA approved a drug, an amphetamine known as Vyvanse, to treat it. It's a drug that comes with a lot of severe warnings. You know, it has a high potential for creating abuse and dependence. It can raise your heart rate. There have been reports of, you know, people dying suddenly as a result of heart attacks and strokes. And so the drug was approved to treat binge eating disorder on the basis that it reduced the number of binge eating sessions that a person has from roughly, I think it was 3.9 per, by three, I think from an average of 5 per week to by 3.9 per week. which is a fairly significant number of reduced numbers of binge eating sessions. But the placebo that it was tested against also reduced the number of sessions by about 2.5 per week. So you have to kind of weigh the risk of the side effects and the complications of the drug with the potential benefits. And in some cases, there are people who feel that the harms outweigh the benefits. Another good example would be adult ADHD. There's a number of amphetamines and stimulants that can be used to treat that condition, many of which carry some of the same risk factors and problems that the drug that's used to treat binge eating disorder. In fact, the drug that's approved to treat binge eating disorder also is one of the drugs that's approved to treat adult ADHD.
And John, as we wrap up, in your reporting, did you see pushback within the medical community or from the outside on these expanded definitions, this growing medicalization of what might just be sort of normal problems?
Yeah, I mean, there's a segment of physicians and researchers who think some of this has gone too far and have written, medical papers and medical journals about this topic and think that it needs to be reined in somewhat. I mean, the eight conditions that we looked at, if you believe the medical literature, affect up to 180 million Americans. And just sort of common sense sort of suggests that is possible that eight conditions that aren't life threatening that virtually no one heard of 20 years ago affect that largest segment of society? I mean, prediabetes. There was just a paper that came out a few months ago that said that roughly half the state of California has prediabetes. So there's a group of physicians and people who are sort of, I guess, more reform-minded, who are trying to curtail this or at least call attention to it. But it continues to happen. So how it will play out in the ultimately, I guess, is anybody's guess.
John, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Thank you for having me.
That's reporter John Fauber from the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel talking about widening definitions of medical disorders and the related growth of drug sales.
Coming up, a mother is getting international criticism after her son fell into a gorilla enclosure this weekend at a zoo, which ended up with the zoo gorilla being killed by officials. And we'll talk about parenting and responsibility in just a moment. I'm Veronica Rickert.
And I'm Rob Ferret. This is Central Time here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.